I love the fact that once that helmet's on and I'm on that bike, it's just me, no distractions. It's just you and the road, and you kind of do what you want. If you want to stop for a coffee or go for some breakfast or do whatever. I just think more people should do it. I wish more people were on the roads on two wheels at the moment. We'd have less traffic if there were. I've gone through every type of bike you can imagine, and that changes the style of riding that I want to do. If you want to take it easy and lazy and just cruise around for a while, then that's the bike I'll be on for a bit. If I want to just go from A to B and commute, then I'll change the bike to that. You know, it's just, it fits everything that I want to do when I want to do it. If I pull up at the Ace Cafe or Bikers or the bike shed, and I'm on something that I might not think is super, super cool, no one has ever looked twice or looked down or said anything negative. It's just another biker, in you come, mate, park up where you can. And it's a very different attitude that I'd imagine you would get in the car. Sometimes you turn up at the biker camps, take the helmet off, and then all the lads are quickly checking, like the number plates are not too small and the exhausts are okay.
Hello there, and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from.
Right, I'm looking forward to this one. I've known this gent for, well over a decade. He has been on our screens for longer than that, probably over 20 years now. He is the champion of Justice, Law and Order, from Crime Watch Live to Scam Interceptors, BBC Morning Live, you name it, he's done it. He's an all-round good egg, a double BAFTA winner. It is, of course, the one and only, the brilliant Rav Wilding.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Well, good, Rav. Thank you so much for joining us. And anyone that's been friends with Ewan for longer than 10 minutes, I applaud your patience and your attitude to life. Let's get stuck into it because, yes, you're on here to discuss motorbikes and everything that we love about two wheels. But we've got to get straight to the kind of most recent news. A BAFTA winner, my friend. Scam Interceptors beating off some very hot competition from a daytime point of view. How does it feel? And are you still basking in that glory?
Oh, yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, actually. So just before talking to you guys, we got the BAFTA win, and that was all a bit of a surprise. It's a show that I've done since it started. It was just an idea that we had when we were coming out of the pandemic called Scam Interceptors. We didn't really know how it was going to be received, and we've had some incredible success with it, and it's a huge honour. It's a tiny show. We make it in a meeting room with a couple of laptops up in Glasgow. And we were up against some huge, great shows like The Chase and Lorraine and Richard Osman's House of Grahams, all brilliant shows. But to be given the win was a massive honour. So it's great. And also, you know what? It spreads the message about these scams that affect so many people, and so many people sort of get a lot of information from it and can really help themselves. So I think most importantly, it does a great job at spreading this awareness to so many.
Yeah, I think that's right, mate, because, you know, I've been scammed. They're so clever now, these scammers. You know, you think for the past, oh, my poor old granny or my dad might get scammed, but it's everyone at the moment. We're all at risk. So well done to you and your team, because obviously the show is so well received, and rightly so. You work hard, and we need to know about these scams, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. And I appreciate you actually saying that, Ewan, because a lot of people still think it's just this one type of person that gets scammed and they're silly to be hooked into it or to be sucked into these scams. That is just so far removed from the truth. It can and does happen to absolutely everyone, as you've just proved. We've had doctors, lawyers, police officers on the show that whilst we've been filming that have been hooked in by these sophisticated scams. And a lot of them, in fairness to them, are embarrassed and they don't want their story shared. And we don't share a story without someone's permission, of course. So a lot of the ones that you see are the ones that obviously have given their permission, but a lot of people choose not to. And they are often younger people. But I can absolutely confirm it can and does happen to every single type of person out there, from young right through to the older generation. So it's just getting everyone a little bit aware about what's out there and what we can do to keep ourselves safe.
No, it's an amazing job, Rav. Just from a purely gossipy TV point of view, you know the other shows that you mentioned, does everyone get on all right? Is there any kind of unsaid competition between all these different shows when it gets to BAFTA season?
Oh, I mean, obviously everyone wants to win. Everyone does want to win. But Richard Osmond, especially, Richard Osmond's been lovely about the show, about Scam Interceptors. He's been incredibly supportive. He's a champion of daytime television. He knows how hard daytime television can be with the tiny budgets that we have to work with. And he's been great. So genuinely, if he had won, I would have been really, really pleased because I know that his show is an incredible show that has been going for many, many years. I would have honestly been pleased for him, but I'm a little bit more pleased that we won it.
and from what you're saying there, what I get reading between the lines, if it was Lorraine, you'd be fuming. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Obviously, TV is very much where you are now. But I mean, given the fact that, it's not the most traditional route to the little square box in the corner of the room, is it? The army, then the Met Police. How does that work?
Yeah, I know. I've just sort of fallen into it. So yeah, I was in the army first, broke my leg. Quite badly, like not that you could have a good break of a leg, but I broke my leg and that sort of ended that career quite abruptly because I was told I'd never be able to run, I'd never be able to do all the things that obviously you need to do in the military. So I left that, did a couple of things, and then ended up working in the Met for a number of years, which I loved and it was brilliant. I did a lot of different jobs within the Met, a really, really busy borough in South London and absolutely loved it. But then it was almost by chance this opportunity came up to apply for a new police presenter role that they wanted on Crime Watch. And this was to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the show, which was back in 2004. And I was always like, probably a little bit like you, Ewan, in your athletics days. I was always messing around and being a bit of a prankster and whatever. And the team that I was with in the police were like, mate, this is up your street. You need to apply for this. And if you don't, we're going to do it on your behalf. And with the greatest will in the world, I did not trust them to send an application into the BBC in my name. So I did all the screen tests, get a call back. And then suddenly I got offered that role. But then once I started doing Crime Watch, I was still a police officer. I was still doing it for many years. It then started getting difficult. You know, I was chasing drug dealers through the back streets of Camberwell and Peckham and getting hold of them and then turning around and going, oh, man, wait till I tell him in prison who's put me in here. And it started becoming a bit of a problem when I thought, you know what, I'm going to have to step away from this role now and then see how this telly world goes for a bit.
I remember working with you on MasterChef and I'd already was well aware of your work on Crime Watch. I remember saying to you, when did you make the decision to go full time in TV? And I think without disclosing too much, you said to me, like an agent had said, I could get you some work. And you said, look, if you can match my salary in the Met, then I'll go for it. And that's what's happened. And I suppose you've not looked back really, have you, mate? Because your career's gone like that and fair play to you. So the best decision you ever made, leaving the police force and doing this full time, or do you miss it at times?
No, I do miss it. And I remember having that conversation with you and the rest of the conversations we had on MasterChef was, how do I cook you? And because you can and I can't. That was also the other conversations we had on that. But I think so. It was definitely the right decision. And I'm pleased that I made that decision. But I do miss it. And in fact, during the pandemic, I actually rejoined for a short time and did go back to policing. You know, I was sat there like everyone else watching the news and seeing how tough the emergency services were finding things when everyone was locked in and going out there and dealing with this virus that nobody really knew too much about at the time. And I did. I rejoined and got the cuffs out and went back to work for a while, which was a great experience and great for me to see it firsthand once again for a short time at least.
Well, it's amazing that you actually took the time back to do that because I can tell firsthand, Rav, that a lot of us were just sat there scratching our heads praying that, well, I was always praying that football would come back and then Ewan was desperate to get back out to get all the freebies he gets from all these expos he does. The career speaks for itself, Rav, and it's a real inspiration to listen to the way you've gone about it because there is that common theme when you speak to successful people in telly that always kind of go, I didn't really know where I was going, but I managed to get there and I've got so much time and respect for that. But let's talk bikes. Come on, this is what we've got you here for. You charming man. Let's talk about the two-wheeled experience. Where does it come from? What's the passion born out of? Where's that little seed been sown?
So I've always loved bikes. I've always loved them. And I first, when I was 17, did my CBT, like many other people, thinking, right, this is it. First step, going to carry on, go all the way through. And I had a smaller bike, had a 100cc, a Suzuki GP100. That was my steed for a little while. And I absolutely loved it. But then I joined the army and didn't have the opportunity to ride. And I was on a list to get my bike test within the army, actually. They were going to put me through. But then I broke my leg and I couldn't do it. And then in all honesty, it was the cost that stopped me doing my full test, because then the direct access had come in and it was like £500. Even back then, it was a lot of money to do this course and the test. And I just didn't have it and I wasn't in a position to do it. And I let it slip and the CBT went. So then it was not until many years later, when I was in my 30s, I did a TV show. I was training for a TV show and I got really badly injured. And I snapped off two of my hamstrings, and we've only got three on the back of our legs, and I snapped two of them off, and I had a big operation, and I got quite poorly afterwards, and lots of things happened, and I couldn't do a lot of the things that I used to do physically. I used to do a lot of cycling, a lot of big miles, a lot of work in the gym on the bikes, all sorts of things which I couldn't do. And I thought, well, I want to get outside, I want to get out and about, I want to feel the fresh air, I want to be on my own and experience what I used to do. Why not do the bike test now? Then I can do all those things. And that's what I did. So I was probably about 33, 34, something like that. And I did my bike test and never, ever looked back from that moment. It was just the minute I sat on the bike, the minute I got on the big bikes and felt the difference between the 125s going up. It's absolutely massive, the difference, isn't it? And I did my test. In fact, the I remember doing the test very well, because the examiner actually played a bit of a naughty trick on me, which I'll go into in a moment. But yeah, I passed the test and never looked back.
Well, firstly, I can't ever imagine you, because you're a bit of a lump on a 100cc motorbike. The poor little engine must have been screaming. But what was it like then? Given in mind you came into biking quite late because of the cost and injuries, whatever. But what was it like when you heard those words, congratulations, you've passed? Because I know the joy I felt when I just thought, yes, I'm independent. I can go and get a bigger bike. And it's magical when you hear those words.
Yeah, it's huge. So you're right. At the time, I was bigger than I am now. I felt like, Donkey Kong, on the Mario Kart. I was on one of those little things. So, I did the test and I thought, you know what? You go over it in your head, don't you? Thinking, oh, I think I did all right on that. I did all right. And I went back into the office within the examiner. And he said, how do you think you did? And I was like, well, yeah, I think it was all right. Yeah, how did I do? And he said, well, what happened when you pulled out of the test center? So I don't know. He goes, well, you give it quite a bit of revs to get your speed up. And did you notice the field on your right? And I said, the field. And he said, yeah. Did you notice the horses? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you gave it so much acceleration, you scared the horses that were in the field. And he said, that's dangerous. I'm not sure I can allow this to happen, because you should have been aware. And I was thinking in my head, oh my goodness, what have I done? Honestly thinking, I did not see any horses. And then I looked at him and I thought, you're winding me up, aren't you? And he went, yeah, I'm winding you up. There's no horses. He was just completely winding me up.
Brilliant.
And he went, yeah, you passed with no minors. So I had a really good pass. But honestly, for those few minutes, you and it took away the fun that you probably experienced on your test. But yeah, it was a great moment.
Mate, I failed first time. I skidded on some leaves on my emergency stop and I was devastated. So I resat my test as soon as I could. And yeah, it's awesome. We talk to everyone about it, don't we, Prats? The special feeling that's when you've really passed funny. That test. It's like, yeah, but I've never heard of someone getting wound up, because sometimes these instructors are a bit, the examiners are a bit boring, aren't they?
Too
straight,
much.
Like no
too
jokes.
Much. Yeah, that's
yeah. Yeah, they are. But I actually had a good experience through it, because now obviously it's split into multiple different types of tests, isn't there? There's the first part, the mod one, when you go through all the different cones. And there was me and these two quite sort of skinny, scruffy looking lads that were waiting to do theirs next to me. And they were sort of looking at me and looking away. And I said, they said, are you ex-army? And I said, yeah, Yeah, I was. Yeah, are you guys in now? And they said, yeah, we're still in. Basically, there were SAS lads that were going away to ride these schema bills, but they needed to have a bike license in order to ride these schema bills up in some cold weather training they were doing in the Arctic. So they got sent up to do their tests. I think they were more nervous than I was, but yeah, we got on all right.
I wonder if the examiner knew who they were. They'd be, you exactly passed. Don't worry about how you ride a bike. You're in, lads. Don't kill me.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to ask. Yeah, I wonder if he messed with it. Was there any similar? I mean, given the fact of how old you were, Rabbit, a bit further down, are you on telly at this point as you're doing this?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, was there an element of kind of looking around, going? I presume the fact that you managed to have a bit of banter with you means he probably was like, "I'm going to have this fella off the telly. Watch this."
I hope. Yeah, I think so. I think he probably thought, I can get away with this. I can tell him whatever. I want to make him squirm. I mean, he certainly won. He certainly won that one, and I won't forget it. But I think it was a bit of fun. And actually, do you know what? It shows they're just human beings, doesn't it?
Yes.
And they want you to pass. Mm. You know, they're not going to pass a dangerous individual. I mean, that sounds pretty tough that you skidded on some leaves, but they're not going to pass anyone that's reckless or whatever. But they want you to do well. They want to keep biking going. Mm. They want to keep it the fun experience that we all enjoy. Mm. So I didn't mind that at all.
No, I think that's such a good point, because there is that encouragement, isn't there? And if you meet a special kind of examiner, they really do put a lot of time and effort, and it reflects on them, don't they? If they want people to pass, they're not just passing people willy-nilly. They want good riders out on the roads, which my experience of it over in Hull was exactly the same type of thing. So when it comes to what you said about getting into or back into biking after that gap route, we speak to people, and sometimes it's a practical thing. Sometimes it's more of an emotional thing that is the overriding reasoning to get into it. What is it that kind of does it for you? Yes, it's a wonderful mode of transport. Yes, it offers us a lot of joy. But is there anything that knits all that together that makes it so special for you? Can you define what riding is to you in a nutshell?
I think it's what I enjoy is switching off from everything else for as long as I want it to. Mm. And I know you can have some brilliant Bluetooth headsets. You can keep communication with everyone if that's what you want to do. I personally don't. And I love the fact that once that helmet's on and I'm on that bike, it's just me, no distractions. It's just you and the road, and you kind of do what you want. If you want to stop for a coffee or go for some breakfast or do whatever. And I think it's quite a sociable experience. If I want to ride down to a caff on a bike, I don't feel odd being just me.
Yeah.
But in other situations, I might feel odd if I just walked into a new town or city and strolled into a restaurant on my own and had a meal for one. I'd feel a bit out of place. But on a bike, for some reason, it's very different. And there's some brilliant bike cafes, especially in London or on the outskirts, where you're on your own. Someone could sit down next to you and you strike up a conversation. You can sit on your own and be on your own if that's what you want. Have a look at some bikes outside. I just love the environment about that as much as I do just getting around on the bike and not having to worry about the traffic like we do in a car.
I suppose that's the key part about that freedom side of it, isn't it? I mean, and again, that's a common thing. Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Rav, you've already alluded to it there, the fact that when you put the helmet on, you're in your own headspace. We've spoken to lots of famous faces here on the podcast, and they all say the same. Visor comes down, and the fact that they can almost just disappear. I mean, let's be honest, you're recognizable. If you're in a car and you get a bit of road rage or someone cuts you up, you've got to be careful what you say or do. You're off the BBC. But on the motorbike, you're just another rider, aren't you? And there's something really unique about that ability, like you said, to turn everything off, just be at one with the bike. It's a special place to be, isn't it?
Yeah, and I love that. It's just you. Nobody knows it's you. Like, I'm not super, super well known or anything like that, but most places I go, they've seen one of the shows that I've done. So, you know, it's a good chance that some people are going to know exactly who I am. And being able to just be myself on that bike and just disappear and going from A to B or A, B, C, D, whatever I want to do that day. I just love it. I just love the freedom of it all. And like say, sort of being incognito is really nice. I just think more people should do it. I wish more people were on the roads on two wheels at the moment. We'd have less traffic if there were.
Very true.
But it's just so many things I just love about it. And the different types of bikes and that changes the style of the riding that you might want to do. And it's that as well. Like I've gone through every type of bike you can imagine, and that changes the style of riding that I want to do. If you want to take it easy and lazy and just cruise around for a while, then that's the bike I'll be on for a bit. If I want to just go from A to B and commute, then I'll change the bike to that. You know, it fits everything that I want to do when I want to do it.
I just got this picture of you rocking up somewhere, Rav, and when you say about being recognised, I mean, if you're a shop owner or a cafe owner, you're probably thinking, right, have I got everything in check here? Scam Interceptors has just rocked up. I'm like, double checking. You did file that thing properly, didn't you? We're not taking, what is it? This is all above board.
I did,
can walk it through the door.
I get that sometimes. You turn up at the bike and caps, take the helmet off, and then all the lads are quickly checking, like the number plates are not too small and the exhausts are okay.
Standing to attention. Calm down, everyone. It's fine. As long as you've done nothing wrong, you shouldn't feel guilty. But I just look guilty all the time. When it comes to that bit about being on a bike, and it's something that we're all very conscious of, especially as you chat to your kids and try and pass on some form of, what's the word, wisdom, when you're saying, get off your phone, and we're all, can you get off your phone whilst reading your own phone? Put your phone down, you're watching rubbish whilst watching rubbish on your own phone. When you get on your bike, you can put it in your pocket, as you say, you don't have to listen to music. It gives you that sense of, however long I'm going to be on this thing that requires all my limbs, all my brain power, all my concentration, this wonderful little computer is not going to suck the life out of me, is it? It gets you doing something which engages your body, your mind and your spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when I was doing the training before my test, my instructor said to me, this is the best mode of transport. It's the best thing you're ever going to do, but it needs all of your concentration. Mm-hmm. And he said, if ever you've had a terrible day at work, don't get on the bike. Right. If ever you've just had a row with your missus, don't get on the bike, because you need to concentrate. You can't be thinking about that when you need to be thinking about what's on the road. I didn't really know what he meant at the time. I didn't really understand it, but I think he's absolutely right, because you do need that focus and that concentration, and you can't let it go, because then that's when people could get in some serious trouble.
Yeah, one of the best bits of advice I got given when I first started riding was just imagine you're invisible. Nobody can see you. Every idiot is going to pull out at a junction. They're not going to see you. They're not going to hear you. Just keep your wits about you. And it's true. You know, you've just got to be at one with that bike and just aware of everything around you. But what I'd love to know, Rav, is your history of bikes. I mean, I know you've had some big bikes, you've had some good bikes, but in terms of where you're at now and that relationship, go through some of the bikes you've had, because I know you've had some good ones.
Yeah, so I've had a few. So I've had street triples, so Triumph street triples. I've had the slightly bigger one, the Speed triple. I absolutely love that. The one thing I'd say about bikes is they're unlike cycles, road cycles. There's not different sizes depending on the person. So I have found that some bikes haven't really fitted me that well. Others have fitted me better. So the street triple didn't really fit me. The Speed triple did. I then had a full-on sports bike for a while. So I had a Gixxer, Suzuki Gixxer 1000.
Nice.
Beautiful, looked amazing, sound amazing, not very comfortable and not very practical. And I was so scared about it getting nicked all the time as well. Mm. But it was fine. It was fine. At the moment, I'm on a BMW GS1200.
Nice.
And it's very just nice. Like, you know what? It does everything I need. It's comfortable. It's big, good road presence. I do a bit of commuting in and out of London. It's good for that. The only thing it doesn't do, and it's never done this, is when I lift up the garage door, I just get that. That's the only box it doesn't tick. And every time I see your socials, Ewan, and I see you and your bikes, that's the bit that I do get the big tick from. Mm. Practicality-wise, I don't know what they're like, but yeah. I get that. Oh man, that looks good.
Well, that's the thing in life, isn't it? If you have a flashy bike, yeah, it looks great and it excites you. But after 5 minutes, everything aches. You need to get off it. So I think we're of the age now where comfort is probably one of the biggest factors. And I think the good thing about the biking world as well, I don't think people really judge you, do you? I don't think if you turned up on a bike that I don't deem as cool, no one's going to go, oh, look at his bike. You know, you're a biker. You're on two wheels and you're accepted.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. If anyone's sort of thinking about getting into biking that's listening to this or watching this or in two minds about it, I thought that was going to be a thing. Mm-hmm. And if I pull up at the Ace Cafe or Rikers or the bike shed and I'm on something that I might not think is super, super cool. Mm. No one has ever looked twice or looked down or said anything negative. It's just another biker, in you come, mate, park up where you can.
Yeah.
And that's a very different attitude that I'd imagine you would get with cars. And you're absolutely right to say that. So I think it doesn't matter what you're on. You're just on two wheels. Come on in.
Well, Rav, I think that really does knit together exactly what this podcast is both about and for, and I'm sure you will agree with me, that sense of community, the fact that everybody's welcome, regardless of bike or whether you've got a sidecar or who you are, where you're from, what you're up to, or what your journey is in life. It's all about getting there to it on two wheels. And I think you've absolutely nailed it. And as a reward for nailing it, I'm going to give you a quiz. I mean, is that a reward? We really don't know. It's a quick fire quiz. We're going to give you 60 seconds. And myself and Ewan are going to take it in turns firing questions at you. It's either or. Give us whatever your best shot is. Give us your instant answer to it. Don't overthink it. Just enjoy it. I think we've got a pretty decent score across the board so far. I think 12, 13 maybe the one that we're looking at.
Around 12, mate. Around 12.
Is that what it is? And given what our wonderful guests have given us so far, as I've always said to them, I've got no idea what the prize is. I've got no idea what we give you if you're the best over the course of a season. And as ever, the best is interpretive. So anyway, Rav Wilding, get yourself strapped in. I'll give you a minute. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Ready? 3, 2, 1. Go, Ewan.
Italian or British bikes?
British.
Spice Girls or Sugar Bags?
Spice Girls.
Chocolate or crisps?
Crisps.
Who would play you, Rav Wilding, in Scam Interceptors the movie?
Probably Chico off the X Factor.
Chico time. Right, American bikes or Japanese bikes?
American.
Indian or Chinese for a takeaway?
Chinese.
Favourite album of all time?
Bob Marley, Legend.
Favourite animal?
Lion.
Who was your motorcycling hero growing up?
Barry Sheen.
What posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
Sorry, Ewan. Colin Jackson and Linford Christie.
Yes!
Good choices, good choices. What's the best thing about live telly?
I love the fact it's one shot. Once it's done, it's done.
Norton or Triumph?
Norton won't let me anymore, so I'm going to have to say Triumph.
not even a choice.
What colour do you associate with London buses and post boxes?
Red.
Dogs or cats?
Cats.
Time's up. Oh. And stopping on a cat bombshell. My word. Right, Rav, let me top this up and we shall find out where you sit in the firmament of our wonderful guests. That is
he
a
seemed
nice
quick.
Round
it seemed quick.
14.
Oh,
little ripple for Rav, please. Thank you very 14. Much. Oh. Well done.
That was tough.
Yeah.
We don't exactly promise you any gifts, but you can get bragging rights for doing well. There you go. 14.
I want a full chat mic shield. That's what I want. I'm jealous.
I think we can do that.
It only took us 6 series to get one.
And we didn't earn it at all.
Right. You've earned your keep today, but we've got to finish with an absolute belter, Rav. So we want to know your fantasy ride, okay? So this is your most idyllic ride in your mind. Where would you go? What bike would you be on? Would you have any company? And would there be a soundtrack? So name the bike, the location, if you have anyone with you, and would there be music in your ears?
Oh, man, that's a cracking question. So as I've already mentioned, the bike that I haven't owned and that I would love one day, if possible, would be like a Harley Davidson, a nice big cruiser, not about the speed, just about the enjoyment. So years ago, I was lucky enough to go out to Hawaii. I was doing a job out there, spent a few days, beautiful place if you've been, if you've not, highly recommend it. And I just love the thought of being out there, riding the Harley, beautiful weather, beautiful scenery, stop where you want. In fact, when we were out there filming, the fixer that we had that was organizing everything took us to this little shack, like a little cafe. And he said, I used to come here all the time when I was growing up. And he said, look, there's a picture of me on the wall. And we looked on the wall. And I was looking at the picture with the fixer and all these other people. And I said, that guy, he looks like Barack Obama. He went, oh, yeah, yeah, we grew up together.
What?
And that was his mate. His mate. So if I'm going to have someone with me, I don't know if he rides, but Barack Obama, I mean, how cool would that be? Just to stop wherever, ask him whatever, hear his story. I mean, he'd have some incredible stories, right? So, and in terms of music, I think just the soundtrack to that ride, because it's in America, Hawaii in America, that vibe, I think we'd have, let's have some Eagles.
Oh, nice.
Amazing. Old school. Old school.
Amazing. I mean,
you know, we've never had that plus.
We've never had Hawaii.
I love the sound of that. Yeah, all the president. Yeah.
I mean, as much as we said about maybe getting recognised with the helmet off, Rav, I think once Barack took his helmet off, I think that'd be all bets are off, wouldn't it, surely?
Oh, it'd be amazing. Imagine that. Imagine people just seeing the former president taking the helmet off. Whoa. Just be incredible.
I'm now imagining like an entourage of 50 Harley Davidsons all blacked out stealth behind you, like just following you to make sure he's all right.
A couple of Apache helicopters just above, just making sure nothing dodgy's going on there.
That is... That's an epic fantasy ride to think like I can just imagine through the mountains, the sweeping rows of Hawaii, the sun beating down, the bright colours of all the flowers, the sea, all the scenery. That's one of my favourite ones, I think, that one. Perhaps that's a good one. Yeah.
And even more so looking out the window where just a minute ago it was hailstoning in May in North Yorkshire. I did think, get me to Hawaii.
Let's do it. Next podcast out there.
Exactly. Hey, we'll have to have a word with our producer. He's the one that holds the purse strings. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat. It's been immense as ever. Powered by Bagshaw's, UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bagshaw will set up a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and so much more.
It's honestly been an absolute joy. Today's guest, what a gent, superstar, lovely, lovely man, double BAFTA winner. Come on, how are we going to top that? BAFTA, the brilliant Rav Wildin.
Cheers, guys.
Rav, super. We really do appreciate you joining us for what we call a biker's blather. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can follow us on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, from myself, from Prox, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, goodbye.